you know, we have probabilities of what's going to happen, and this is going to be the exciting place to be.
The RIAA is the Recording Industry Artists of America, which is shutting down increasingly on the use of music over the Internet, right, Professor?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
While everyone else is using the Internet to manipulate images, sounds, you know, audio and video and data, the recording industry is basically trying to clamp down and stop that from happening, which completely goes against the direction of the technology that's being developed. And it's the technology which is driving the way the world is going, and that's where Professor Lessig wants to see the law go, is let the law be shaped by the technology, not force the law based on the way the corporate values are created.
Yeah, that's right. But my focus recently, I think this is a very useful way to think about it, is generational. So Pew did a study of practices on the Internet. They found 74% of teenagers had created and shared content on the Internet. Right? I'm not talking about people doing peer-to-peer file sharing. That number is about 99%. But I'm talking about teenagers actually creating stuff and making it available to others using the Internet. Now, the idea that 74% do that is astonishingly high, in my view. And it, you know, signals the kind of taste of the next generation, which is to be empowered to create. And so that, you know, if that's what they want, then the question is, are you going to either, you know, enable them to do that legally? And if you do that, then you become part of what they're creating, or, you know, shut them out. And if you shut them out, then they'll either do it illegally, and you won't get any return from that, or they won't pay attention to you, and you won't get any return from that either.
David,
did you want to jump in with your question? Sure.
Yeah. Well, so can you repeat that percentage, 74%?
74%, yes.
So we always talk in Pacifica about, you know, wanting to reach a broader audience of youth. And the point is, if we're providing something of real value in their creative efforts, there's going to be a real appreciation for that service. With respect to Sarah's question about, you know, how people find content that's worthwhile, I think that we'll have a concept of virtual program directors. Different people will be free to aggregate our content in different way for different audiences. So all the fight that goes on in the station about the decisions of an individual program director will be relieved on the Internet, because we might allow anybody to be a program director to aggregate content in blocks. And I really think that's one way it'll work. People are attracted to specific personalities. So in the way that a DJ just organizes other licensed music, we may have people aggregating our content in different ways and with other people. So we'll need to think about, you know, various technologies to support that and the rest of it. But I think that the real important thing is the way it can cause our audience to grow rapidly and have them appreciate us for providing a service. The last point I want to make is that Democracy Now!, which is our strongest fundraising program, gives its entire archive away constantly. You can go and listen on the web, you can watch the video, and you can go back as far as you want. They've even got people transcribing it. They're out there making their content useful to people. Where they're getting support is because people understand the value of that. And when you're dealing with people who are out there trying to create and running into walls with all this other cultural product everywhere else, and they come to Pacifica and they find content that we've made available for them to exercise their creativity, I really think it's going to be liberatory. I think it's going to relieve a lot of the fights of the station. And the last thing I'll say is, if we can generate 1,000 hours of production in each signal area, we'll have the basis for creaming off the best, you know, 20 or 30 hours of it for broadcast. So the more, we shouldn't be threatened by this activity, we should be promoting it, and then gradually you can find the most brilliant stuff and put it on our air, which we already do.
Do we have time for one more question?
Sure, Lisa. Is that Lisa or Lisa?
Lisa.
Lisa Davis from WBAI.
With the S sound. Right. I just want, because first of all, like I said, I think this is a great idea. But one of the things I was thinking about, I guess that's going to, from the legal aspect, maybe bring up more of the issue in terms of consent and release forms. I mean, it's one thing if you have the producer, but let's say somebody's interviewing somebody. And with this, you can never tell when suddenly somebody's words are going to be in demand. you know, 10 years from now, everybody might want what was said. And so I would think that the issue of release forms then becomes even, I would think, maybe even more important, you know. It's one thing if the producer says yes, but if the other person being interviewed or whatever says, well, wait a minute, I didn't know it was going to be like this. So I don't know if you had any comments about that aspect of it.
I think it's a very good point. And I think, you know, if you choose to do this, we should do some very careful lawyering around exactly how to set it up so you can do it easily and most respecting the interests involved best. And this would be one very important part of that. I agree.
Lawrence, this is Rob. I just wanted to ask a follow-up question to Greg's question, which I thought was a good one. And Greg basically went to the issue of, don't we create a different licensing paradigm where we have not employees that are producing content that's owned by the network, but where we have volunteers producing content, and they may want to claim ownership as well. And yes, it is a problem. It is an issue that it requires lawyering. But it seems to me that part of the way to look at this issue from the local station level is that we may have producers and programmers that are producing programming, whether it's part of the regular schedule or not, and they may be taking the initiative to distribute this programming if they get a convenient licensing mechanism and basically taking Pacifica content and finding audiences for it, some of which may be free, but some of which may also be paying. And that may open up markets all over the country for us.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the way Creative Commons licenses work, we have, we basically say pick three options, answer three questions. Do you want to allow commercial use? Do you want to allow modifications? And if you allow modifications, do you want to require the people who release modified works release their works under the same license? That's called a share-alike provision. And basically, if you use a share-alike provision here, I would say if somebody takes your content and mixes it into their content, then they've got to release their content also under a share-alike provision. So that would guarantee that in some sense they couldn't claim it back in a way that would take value from the community. And then if you overlaid on top of that this sort of commercial rights dimension, which is, you know, if you use it in a commercial way, then here's the licensing structure for people who have contributed to this, then you could preserve both the value of commercial but also the value of community that the share-alike restriction builds.
Did everybody get that, what Dr. Lessig just said? Because maybe you should repeat that, because that's a little bit of a tricky concept. Because I have a little trouble with it, too. Could you repeat that?
The share-alike concept?
Yeah,
so
the whole piece.
So basically, when we give somebody a license under Creative Commons, they've got to answer three questions. And one of them is, do I want to allow commercial use? Second, you want to allow modification? And third, if you allow modification, do you want to require that people who modify your work release their work under a similar license? And that third condition we say share alike, meaning you've got it, you've been allowed to share it, then you have to make your stuff available to be shared by others. And that's an automatic way to make sure that when somebody takes your content and mixes it into theirs, they're going to have to make their content available in a similar way to others. Now, the tricky thing that we've not yet done, but, you know, when I talked to David, I said we'd be interested in experimenting in this context to see how to do it, is to overlay on top of that the commercial rights. So you basically say, for this non-commercial community that's engaging in this production of citizen media, they get to do it all so long as they agree to make theirs available for others, too. But if you want to do it in a commercial way, then here are the terms that govern how it gets used commercially. So you try to facilitate these two separate markets and also facilitate the community building that you want to encourage through citizen media.
Thank you.
It's Bonnie. Do we have time for any more?
Yeah, but I think this is going to be about the last one, Bonnie. Thank you.
I was really interested in Greg's comment and question in that I am a volunteer programmer on one of these radio stations, and especially in that I'm a music programmer, and it does seem to me, I'm not sure who made the comment about having people play live on the air and then being able to release this to people to use it as they choose. it seems to me that we would be dealing with an enormous amount of paperwork and having to keep track here if, in fact, we're dividing this up into different use rights and whether people are using it in a commercial sense or they're using it in a nonprofit sense. And my experience with it, because I work with music, is that once we decide to let something go on the Internet, we just kiss it goodbye, because you're not going to be able to keep track of how people are going to use it. And as far as people modifying things, you know, you can do everything you want to say you're going to do to control that. But there is no control. We're in a digital world right now. And I am especially sensitive to the idea that we are thinking that we can do this with music, because no matter what air it's been broadcast on, we don't own the copyrights to that. You know, we have to give some respect to the artist's rights in this. Am I completely being the wet damper here?
No, I think absolutely this is the BBC issue, too. You've got to respect the artist's rights. And I think the description of the idea was, you know, that you find artists who want to exercise their rights in exactly this way. And there are artists that do. Especially, I think the idea was around local artists who you're trying to give some sort of platform to. And I also agree with the point that in some sense you're not going to control at least some of the uses of this once it's out there. And that's part of the reality that pushes people to think about other ways to make it legitimate for people to get access to it. But I do think that if you have a license that basically runs with a copyrighted material, there's no contract that you're signing. It's basically because of the way copyright functions, if you release it under a public license, the license governs the terms of it no matter who uses it, and without any sort of formal agreement with the original copyright owner. If you release it like that, then entities that are engaging in commercial transactions, you know, will be guided quite strongly by their lawyers to make sure that they've cleared the necessary rights. And because if they don't, there's a huge amount of copyright penalty out there that they're going to face. So the point is, and so if you set that up in that way, then you're not going to control the non-commercial uses. That's part of our point. But you will set up a structure that allows people to opt into legitimate commercial uses in a way that, I agree, has to respect the artist's rights.
Hey, can I give a concrete example also? At KPFK, during our Katrina fundraising, artists came into studio and they signed contracts with us that said we could offer it as part of Fund Drive premiums. It basically became ours to do anything they want. Jackson Browne, Ben Harper came into our studios and did live stuff. And the point is, if we're supporting not a privatized world of commodities, but a liberatory commonwealth of civic media that becomes richer with time, I think there are a whole lot of artists who want to be a part of that and want to be identified as being a part of that, who will contribute to that archive. And that's sort of the point of not saying blanketly we're doing everything with it, but just saying, you know, we have the option of doing this. And indeed, as our platforms become more attractive and as our commonwealth of media becomes more attractive, more and more people come to it and people become more and more known. And that's really one of the things that's been found in the open source software movement, which is you get this exponential growth over time that's small at the outset, but it grows bigger and bigger to the point that civic production can compete with corporate production and distribution, because it becomes the aggregation of content that's available to the Commonwealth becomes so rich over time. And I think there are lots of people who would be willing to be a part of that, would be excited about it, being part of a new form of media rather than the capture form.
And that's really the area where Professor Lessig is encouraging, you know, people to think, is that we should not be grounded by the law. We should be grounded by what the technology enables us to do and how that supports commonwealth approaches to shared property. Okay. We've taken about an hour of time right now, so unless there's Professor Lessig, if you'd like to leave us with any thoughts, we can release you.
Well, I just leave you with the offer that if there's any way I can help in this, I'm really eager to do that. And obviously this is can only be the beginning of a conversation, but if there are more ways to make it detailed or make fill this out in a way that helps it, helps you think about it, just let me know, and I'm happy to do that.
Thank
That's
you
a
so
great
much.
Offer.
You.
Okay,
thanks
very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, bye.
Thank you
and,
so much.
I'm going to check off, too, and I just really want to thank the committee both for entertaining Dr. Lessig's presentation and for letting me butt in so much. It means a lot, and thank you very much.